Well, I'd like to welcome you all to the evening service here. Been a busy day for us, been a good day. I've known this speaker for a while. 50-some years, I think. 57. Something like that. And I know that it is his heart's desire to serve his master to the best of his ability. So as he stands to deliver what the Lord has placed upon his heart this evening, I would ask for your prayers for him and for your attention and your smiles for our brother, Elder Alvin Harris.
Can you hear me all right?
Yep.
Yeah. I'm going to try to get down without breaking my neck. Let's see here. I gave this sermon in Independence some time ago, and so for those of you that are from Independence, don't let out my punchline, okay? I suppose if I had to entitle it, I would entitle it Sacrament and Truth, with the emphasis on the truth. And I want to give you a little history, maybe even a little art lesson, and particularly to young people, the things that you've been taught in school or what you've read recently or where you've been led, see what you think about what I say and what you've learned and how it correlates. The gospel went into apostasy sometime starting in about 325 AD, and was complete with the papal rule out of Rome by about 750 AD. That commenced the Dark Ages. The Dark Ages kind of wound up with the Crusades and went on to a period which we refer to as the Renaissance. And during the Renaissance, there were a number of poets and authors, particularly painters, who left their stamp on history and on Christianity. And Christianity today uses some of those images and some of those things to promote their doctrines. And some of them are true, and some of them are not true. And so I want to look at some of those. This is a painting of the Last Supper. It was after Michelangelo painted the original. They show Jesus there holding up the bread or the Eucharist, and this goes along with their theology and what they propose as the way to serve sacrament. By the way, I'm not going to get into how you serve sacrament or what sacrament is, but the theory behind sacrament. Because, you see, these gentlemen came together for what reason?
Passover.
The Passover. He was going to eat the Passover meal. They didn't know that he was going to serve what we call sacrament, or that he was going to start a new ordinance. They were going to eat the Passover. So, first, the Last Supper is the Passover. Okay, I want you to study that picture, because there are probably over 1,000 different Last Suppers circulating throughout the world. Some of them are more or less accurate, and some of them aren't, and I'm going to show you several of them and let you see what they propose. Let's see here. I should have had this set up as an actual PowerPoint, and I don't. That is a carving of the Last Supper in a salt mine in Poland. It survived the war. It's in pretty good shape. But of course, there is no color, and the detail doesn't really show up there. This is a rendition showing Jesus here in the center, surrounded with his apostles, and this guy slurking off in the corner with a sour expression like he's hiding something is Judas. Now, this isn't like Da Vinci's. We'll get to that in just a moment. I think I might skip this one for the moment. This is the actual Da Vinci painting. The Da Vinci painting resides in a Santa Maria de Grazia monastery in Milan, Italy. There are some people who think it's in Rome. It is not. And interestingly enough, this is not a painting. It's a fresco. Do you know the difference between a fresco and a painting? A fresco is a painting done on a wet plaster wall. And as the plaster dries and the paint dries, the colors change and they are thought by some to be enhanced. And in their original form, frescoes are very beautiful. They have a problem. They're in a wall in a building. You don't move them or haul them around. And so the actual painting, and that's it, and it has faded over the years. It's been retouched and retouched and retouched, and they're trying to preserve it, but it's going downhill every year. National Geographic has done several articles on it, and you may have read them. I'm going to show you one here in just a little bit. But it's kind of fuzzy. There it is, enlarged just a little bit. You will notice that on the right-hand side, there are three windows here and a door. Three windows here and a door. There are three windows in the back. There seems to be some thought among the authorities that there is some connection between the famous Da Vinci Code. Have you heard about the Da Vinci Code? And these three windows, or these pairs of three windows, and what they mean. I don't know, and so far I haven't read anything that's accurate that anybody else really knows either, except that it seems to be in all of the paintings. Now, whether that room was actually constructed that way or there were windows really that way, we don't really know. Does anybody know when the painting was made? Well, there's a little saying that'll help you remember it. When you were a kid in school, you remember the little rhyme, in 1492, Columbus sailed the seas of blue. You remember that? Okay. Well, it turns out that's when Da Vinci was working on the Last Supper. He completed it in 1495. So that'll help you remember it. Just remember the Columbus saying, and then you'll know when it was done. This is a modern depiction of what it might look like tonight. You notice these guys, although they had togas on, they're a little more modern. And then you'll see some of the bald heads except for Jesus there in the center. They have modern looks to their faces. I don't know if you've ever noticed, but if you study the masters of the Renaissance. Most of the painters were Dutch, German, and French, and the people in the pictures always look like them. They don't look like Israelis or Arabs or somebody from the Middle East. They look like somebody from Holland. And this is the case here. These could be Middle European or American. And according to Da Vinci's notes, he kept meticulous notes in his diary. He had identified all of the apostles, and how, I don't know, in 1492, he was able to do so, but each one is individual. They have individual expressions, and it's really uncanny the expressions he puts on them, or that any of the other guys that have copied it since have put those same expressions on their faces. They try to make Judas look like a Hulk over here, and like he's going to take over, you know. And John is the youngest of the disciples. He was fuzzy-faced, baby-faced, I might say. In fact, the literature says he may have even looked effeminate. And hence, that leads us to another theory we'll talk about in a little bit. And they've tried to depict that in all of these expressions on these men's faces. Let's go to the next one here. And this was the first one, the Eucharist. And this is the one which I took from Catholic literature. And it shows the table. I'm not sure, but I think this is supposed to be Judas on this side. This is John on this side. Now, for some reason, he's on the wrong side. In all of the other paintings of the Last Supper, John is over here. But they show John here, leaning against Christ. Now, I want to read you some scriptures. I want to read you the story. Then came the day of unleavened bread, when the Passover must be killed, and he sent Peter and John, saying, "Go and prepare us the Passover, that we may eat." And they said unto him, "Where wilt thou that we prepare?" They didn't have a clue what they were doing. And he said unto them, "Behold, when you have entered into the city, there shall a man meet you, bearing a pitcher of water. Follow him into the house where he entereth in, and you shall say unto the good man of the house, 'The master saith unto thee, where is the guest chamber where I shall eat the Passover with my disciples?'" Now, I find that all very interesting. We believe the Bible. We believe in it. We find the truth. And I think that really happened. But Peter and John didn't prepare the Passover. Another man did. Who was he? Was he a member of the church? Was he an innkeeper? We don't know. But they will tell you all kinds of stories today and have ordinances in some of the churches to match them. "And they went and found, and he had said unto them, and they made ready the Passover." Now, somebody had to prepare that food. The bitter herbs, the paschal lamb, they bring in the other accoutrements. They had to have serving people, waitresses, we call them today. And who were they? We don't know. "And he said unto them, 'With desire I have desired to eat this Passover with you before I suffer. For I say unto you, I will not any more eat thereof until it be fulfilled in the kingdom of God.' And he took the cup and gave thanks and said, 'Take this and divide it among yourselves.'" That's in verse 17. If we go up to verse 20, it says, Likewise also the cup after supper, saying, this cup is the New Testament in my blood, which is shed for you. But behold, the hand of him that betrayeth me is with me at the table. That gives us some clues. We know that according to the Passover, there are four cups of wine, not one, and that it is the fourth one that is the cup of blessing that he later used when he proposed the new sacrament or the new ordinance. Also, he says that the one who betrays him is there. So Judas hasn't left yet. Judas is still there. So there are still 12 apostles there, right? Okay. There are those who will tell you otherwise. But I tend to believe the Bible. And truly the Son of Man goeth as it was determined, but woe unto that man by whom he is betrayed. And I showed you the one where the painter had depicted Judas sloking off into the dark, you know, to do his deed. There were a number of things that happened at the Last Supper. Let's read John 13 and the 34th verse. And he says, little children, yet a little while I am with you. You shall seek me, as I said unto the Jews. Whither I go, you cannot come. So now I say unto you, a new commandment given unto you, that you love one another as I have loved you, yet you also love one another. Now, it's interesting that the Christian world uses the Last Supper as one of several icons to promote their theologies, but they don't mention anything about this commandment, which matches the second commandment, love thy neighbor as thyself. There was more going on at the Last Supper than simply the idea of the creation of the Eucharist. But the world doesn't recognize that. I find that very interesting. Let's read John 14 and verse 8. Philip saith unto him, Lord, show us the Father, and it sufficeth us. Jesus said unto him, have I been so long time with you, and yet hast thou not known me, Philip? He that hath seen me hath seen the Father. They look alike. In simple English. Philip, he that hath seen me hath seen the Father. And how sayest thou then, show us the Father? Believest thou not that I am in the Father, and the Father in me? And the words that I speak unto you, I speak not of myself, but the Father that dwelleth in me, he doth the works. And this is a concept that is just sort of missed by the Christian world. Let's go back to chapter 13 here in John. I picked on John to pull these out. I guess I'm doing what old Brother Maley used to say. He used to refer to that as fragging, when you pulled out one scripture and read it, you know, and didn't read the whole thing. So let's go to John 13, 4. He riseth from supper, and laid aside his garments, and took a towel, and girded himself. So after supper, what did he do? We all recognize this as the foot washing ceremony. Some churches have pounced on that, and they do it today. they have a foot washing ceremony. Others don't ascribe that to having happened at the Last Supper. But that was one of the things. But he explained it to them, didn't he? He said, this wasn't an ordinance that he was giving them, but one of servitude. You will serve each other, and you will serve the God, and you will serve fellow man. That was what that foot washing was all about, servitude. And that the Christian world also misses, and they don't tie that to the Last Supper. So here is a beautiful icon that could be used in many ways, and they kind of miss the boat all the way around. In John 14, I've got a couple other verses over there. Let's do 16 and 26. And I will pray the Father, and he shall give you another comforter, that he may abide with you forever. Even the Spirit of truth, whom the world cannot receive, because it seeth him not. Neither knoweth him, for he dwelleth with you, and shall be in you. And I will not leave you comfortless. And I think over in 26 it says, but the Comforter, which is the Holy Ghost, and that identifies what it is specifically. And again, I think the Christian world misses this and its connection with the Last Supper. Whom the Father will send in my name, he shall teach you all things. That was mentioned in the two previous sermons today, or the comments this morning and the sermon this afternoon. Wherefore, I have said unto you, peace I leave you. So, what was the Last Supper then? What was its purpose? He told him to go into town to find this guy that has this upper room, and we're going to eat the Passover meal. Okay, they think, fine, we'll go eat the Passover meal. And then while he had them captive in that room, he held class, and he taught him his various individual ideas pertaining to the gospel. It is true that he did come forth with not only a new commandment of love thy neighbor as thyself, but the idea of the sacrament and remembering him. And if you go back into the Old Testament, and this is another sermon, but it explains the idea of the Passover and what it's for. It's to remember leaving Egypt, the Exodus, and that's all. It has nothing to do with Christ. But the Last Supper, he then took that opportunity to promote the new ordinance, the one of the sacrament. And who do you remember? What's it say in Moroni in the Book of Mormon? You remember Jesus Christ. That's why you take the sacrament. You don't remember Exodus. Now, the Jews were given a commandment. What was it? You will do it forever. I happen to believe the Bible. I believe the Jews are supposed to celebrate Passover forever. Exodus. But there is another ordinance. If they become a Christian, if they accept Christianity, they will accept the sacrament and remembering Jesus Christ, like it says in Moroni. It's not complicated. You just have to read it, think about it, and apply it. Now, I want to go back to analyzing Da Vinci's painting here. And to do that, I want to go to the good one. Let's see. Well, I'll use that one. Okay. Now, as I said, the Christian world uses this as an icon that they came together for sacrament. In fact, I was in a church in Kansas City not too long ago, and in their foyer they have life-sized statues carved and set up as the Last Supper. And it's a beautiful thing, you know, and it's all under drapes and looks real nice. And that's the idea here. But the authorities have been arguing for years about Da Vinci's painting because he had the most research, he had the most notes of anybody, and they did an article in National Geographic, and this happens to be this month's Geographic, by the way. I'm not a salesman, I'm not promoting the Geographic, but it's a good article on Da Vinci. And they did one last year, and they stressed the Last Supper and some of his notes there and the different men that he was able to track. But come back to this. Originally, in here it says, go meet this guy, and we're going to eat the Paschal meal, the Passover. Where is it? The authorities have all come to the conclusion those are empty vessels. They have surmised that a certain vessel was used for a certain thing, and therefore that was the meal, and it had been served, but there are no remnants. There's no food there. You notice anything else? It turns out that Da Vinci had a couple of students, and one of them was Andrea Soleri, and he made a copy, but his was a painting, and it's in Belgium. It hangs in Belgium today, and he copied Da Vinci's original dot for dot. He didn't change a thing. To the extent that the authorities, after examining it, have said, Da Vinci may have painted this himself, not his student. He had another student who did one. His name was Karl Bloch. He did one called The Goblet. And it's a little different. He's got a few different things in it. I'll show you that one in a little bit. And these things exist all over Europe particularly, but they're in the United States also. What else? What don't you see?
Goblets.
Huh?
Drinking.
Goblets. There are no goblets on that table. Not even for Christ. Now I've got another one which shows three goblets, and I've got another one that shows six goblets. What's right? But Da Vinci, the master, who was supposed to have had this really organized, doesn't have any goblets. Well, if there are no goblets and there's no evidence of the Paschal meal, there's no basins down here on their feet, and you can see their feet under the table. They still have their sandals on, so they haven't had their feet washed yet when he painted this. What was he painting it for to show? Because the things that are in the Bible that are reasons that they had the Last Supper aren't evidenced in that painting. So what good is it? What was he trying to depict? You'll like my punchline. Let's see here. Oh, my. Okay. In this painting, this guy is Judas. And when that other painting, Judas was in front of the table. Now, we used to have a saying when we were kids that he spilled the beans. Have you ever said that about somebody who can't keep anything, you can't keep a secret? You tell them something, they tell somebody else right away. They spill the beans. Okay, Joyce's sister Janice was always spilling the beans. They'd go out and shop for her father for a birthday present. He'd come home and Janice would climb right in his lap and say, "Now, Daddy, when we went out shopping today, I'm not supposed to tell you we bought you a present." And she spilled the beans. Well, back in those days, they had a saying like that too. It's called spilling the salt. The salt was a very high-priced commodity in those days. Well, you know, Solomon had his salt mines. And the salt was expensive. They didn't put it in shakers like we do, you know. They put it in a bowl, and then you took your fingers and you took a pinch of it. You've heard that, pinch of salt, you know? And you sprinkled it on your food. And you passed the bowl around. And you were very careful you didn't spill the salt in that bowl. Okay? Look at Judas's elbow right here. And there's a little bowl tipped over and a pile of spilled salt. Judas is the ogre, he's the bad guy, and he's the guy who spilled the salt. He committed the crime. There it is, right at his elbow. Now, why did Da Vinci put that in his picture? That's because Da Vinci was a student of people, and he was an expert at it, apparently, and could portray expressions, sadness, sorrow, grief. He could get it on canvas where other painters couldn't. And he was really good at it. And his whole mission was not the Passover meal. It was not serving the sacrament. It was depicting the type of character and the morals and the attitude of the men who were working with him. He wanted to show their passions and their expressions. And he included this little funny thing here, the spilled salt at Judas's elbow. And interestingly enough, that's in the other artists have copied that, and they put it in their painting also. Now, the last, and which I think is the most egregious, is the latest theory put out by Dan Brown, who wrote the Da Vinci Code. Have any of you read it? It's interesting reading, but don't believe it. The theory is that Jesus was married and that this young fellow over here is not really John. That's Mary Magdalene. And let's go to one of the other there. That does kind of look like a feminine person, doesn't it? Do you believe the Bible? The Bible said all 12 of his apostles were there. With him, that'd be 13 in the room plus the serving people. Okay? If that's Mary Magdalene and John isn't there, the number's wrong. There are only 11 apostles. But the Bible's very clear. The Bible says John was there, and he leaned on his breast. And at one point, he even asked him, "Is it me that's gonna turn you into the authorities?" He was worried about it. And of course, in this picture, they've got him on the right side, the right side instead of the left. By the way, you can see in this picture too. This is one of the copies of the original Da Vinci, They still have their sandals on down here. They haven't washed their feet yet. And again, no goblets, no food. I think I'm just about done with my art lesson. Some time ago, the Lord pricked my heart with what was true about eating the Passover meal with these apostles and what he left them as a legacy of commandments, things that they should do, and that I should study it. That was for me. And so I did. And then he said I should share it. And so I have. I think it's kind of interesting. It's a sort of a show and tell, and it's a different kind of sermon. I don't do this very often. As a matter of fact, I don't like to use PowerPoint. I had to have some expert help here tonight. But the conclusion I drew is that if you want to know the truth about an ordinance, about what you're to do, follow what you were told earlier today. Read it from the scriptures, the Bible and the Book of Mormon. Don't take it from the world. Don't believe this stuff. Some history is good. And it's not bad to study it and learn where the faults are and where the faults aren't. But don't believe that that's rock solid, because it is not. And in fact, since that time, most of the new modern paintings have been doctored up so that they can use them in proposing other ordinances, which in my book is a no-no. We have to take our ordinances from the scriptures where the truth exists. Let me run through these one more time just to be sure I got them all. That's the original. And so is that. See how faded it is? But you'll notice that the original does have John on the left hand, on the right hand side of Christ. And if you look real close at Judas over here, there's the little spilled bowl of salt. You've got to really blow that up to see it, but it's there. And then the modern depiction, and then, of course, they have reversed some of the characters. I assume this is Judas. Now, I think this one has goblets on there, doesn't it? One, two, three, four or five of them. Yeah. How they do that, I don't know, because they weren't in the original. And I might say, we don't know how many there were. If anybody knows how many goblets there were, please tell me. We don't know if there was one or if there were six. We know that back in those days, when men traveled, the missionaries traveled, it was tradition they carried their own cup with them. They carried it on their belt, so they had something to drink from when they came to the wells or the oasis or places where they would pass through. But it says that he had the man of the house prepare the meal and serve it, which means to me they furnished everything. And so I doubt that they used those little drinking cups that they carried with them when they traveled. I have no idea if those were pottery or if they were metal. And then back to the Eucharist. And with that, Brother Pastor, I think I'm through.